Welcome back to Ubuntu Podcast. This is Season 10, Episode 19, and it's Tuesday the 11th of July. We're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Mark.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Not bad at all.
Good, good.
Although it's a bit wet.
It's a bit wet. It is a bit wet. It's very, very rainy outside. And Alan.
Hello, it is also raining here.
Unsurprising, given that we are separated but by one county. So, Mark, what have you been up to recently?
I have been playing Tomb Raider.
Which Tomb Raider?
The newer one that's just called Tomb Raider.
Is that the one that's got 2013 somewhere in the name?
Not in the name.
No.
It was probably made in 2013.
Is that the one? Is that the one that runs natively on Linux?
It is the one that runs natively
right.
on Linux. That's the one I've been playing.
Does she still have pointy lady parts?
No. She is much more humanly bodied
right.
than previously.
Are you referring to the 1994 version of Tomb Raider?
Get you with your encyclopedic knowledge of Tomb Raider. What's going on over there?
It's
not a driving game. What's going on?
So back in 1994, I had a, in air quotes, gaming PC with, I think, some kind of VR. No, VR.
3DFX card.
3DFX. It wasn't 3DFX. It was the other one.
Voodoo?
No.
Was it Visa Local Bus? Or
no,
was
the cheap one that was no good that you didn't realise. But anyway, I had that one and I had Tomb Raider came free in the box with that. I also have this version of Tomb Raider that I won in a competition last year for tweeting something, but I've not played it yet.
Oh, it's quite good fun. It's interesting sort of... It felt at the beginning, it felt a bit like it was just a big interactive cutscene. But then I realised that you're not just supposed to plough through the story relentlessly. You're supposed to like go and explore and solve puzzles and stuff. So, yeah, it's good fun.
How long have you been playing it? How many hours in the game?
How many hours? That is a good question, Alan. And if I can extend this sentence long enough,
that you can open Steam and then
find
scroll
the
down.
Answer for you. Unfortunately,
I think that's one of the cool things about Steam. Actually, is it tells you how much of your life you've wasted on playing games.
Is that a cool thing or a worrying thing?
Yes,
I find it helps me sort of gauge how worth it a game was.
Yes, right, exactly.
So I have played it for 11 hours so far, and I think I'm round about halfway through the story, or just over halfway through the story, but in terms of exploration, I've only done about 40% of it.
And is it okay on a controller, or is it...
Oh, yeah, it's perfect on a controller, right. Definitely.
Steam so
controller.
When I go on holiday later in the year and I figure out how to pack my laptop and my Razer external graphics amplifier in my suitcase, is this the game that I should take with me to play on the beach?
Why not?
Gosh, that's actually something I hadn't considered. You can actually take... a laptop on holiday with a proper gaming
video. What
are you
going
to power it from?
A plug.
Yeah.
They have power in these their foreign parts.
Not on the beach.
Well, I'm sure
you could get one of those very, very long orange extension leads.
Yeah. I'm sure I could fit that in the oversized suitcase that I'm already planning to take for all of the other gadgetry I need.
I could just picture you walking down onto the beach, unwinding a coil of electric cable. That's it. Off you go, kids, play. I'm all right.
I'm going to somewhere that I'm very familiar with, and I'm already thinking, I know where the power outlets are.
Is it single player? Can you play Tomb Raider?
There is some sort of multiplayer thing. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I think it's like a sort of deathmatch kind of thing, but I've not actually looked at it. But yeah, there's multiplayer.
Super. All right, should we get on with it?
Yeah. Yes.
And now it's time for some news. And first up in the news this week, everyone is making their own distro.
Everyone? Well, Martin's made one, so have you made
that's
one
everyone.
Yet, Mark?
I haven't.
I kind of did, I guess.
I think one of the Linux Voice guys is making one. Or no, that's not really a distro, that's
like
an OS written in assembler. Yeah.
Right. So who's making one now?
Specifically, we're talking about OEMs who sell laptops and stuff, are making their own distros.
Which OEMs are doing this?
Tuxedo.
Oh, they sound familiar.
We reviewed their, I'm going to say, Infinity Book Pro. Is that the right combination of words?
With a 13 on the end, yes.
Yes, excellent. So they have announced Tuxedo Zubuntu 1604 LTS, which is their own XFCE desktop distro, which is based on Ubuntu, as you might have guessed, but has custom themes, drivers, and an updated kernel. And they claim that on the Infinity Book Pro 13, while Linux Mint only manages a measly 6 hours of battery life, Tuxedo's Ubuntu 16.04 LTS will get 12 hours of battery life.
So there are words that come to mind in my head when you read 6 hours and 12 hours of battery life on this device that I've actually had my hands on. They're not suitable for this podcast.
So are you suffering some incredulity by any chance?
Yes, I'm suggesting that a 34 watt hour battery is incapable of running any kind of laptop for 6 or 12 hours.
Right,
and their laptop with their kernel comes nowhere close to either of those numbers.
Okay, so let's go for the benefit of the doubt that all battery figures are lies, right?
Yes.
Because generally speaking, they all are. They're all just the same as like diesel emission figures are lies. Battery life figures are lies. These are slightly more extruded fabrications than normal, perhaps?
Very. These are VW class exaggerations, I
right,
think.
Right, okay. Yes. I think it's difficult to say because, like, you have had the hardware.
Mm.
You've had an incarnation of the software, but not the one that they're touting in this announcement. So if I was being absolutely fair, I think we would need to see a laptop running that software with our own eyeballs to see it run for 12 hours.
Now, okay.
It's entirely possible that there is a spin of this laptop that has a higher capacity battery, maybe.
Not that I've seen.
No, that's my point. None of us have.
Okay.
But there is the possibility that they have a new model which has a, you know, higher watt-hour battery. Plausible?
Okay. Well, the ODM isn't advertising such a model being available, but let's just pretend that they haven't updated their website.
As a customer of that ODM, they could potentially put a bigger battery. So maybe that's all it is. It's just more electrons in the box and some tweaks to the kernel that make it a bit more, you know.
Yeah.
But so speaking of tweaks to the kernel, if they're actually marketing this as Tuxedo Ubuntu, but they're changing the kernel, surely they shouldn't be calling it Ubuntu, should they? Do I understand that correctly as far as the trademark guidelines go?
Not sure. I don't think so, technically. I'd be interested to know what the Ubuntu guys feel about this, having what they've created changed and still being referred to as Ubuntu.
Right. It would make more sense to call it something like a remix, like a Ubuntu remix. Yeah. And it could, like, giving them, again, Captain Benefit of the Doubt over here, it could be that they just don't appreciate the nuances of the naming scheme we use, even though it's clearly laid out in our terms of the trademark use. So it could be that they need to rename this to something like Tuxedo Ubuntu Remix.
They could call it Tuxedo XFCE.
Or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Tuxedo Ubuntu.
I think the bigger message here is it's interesting that OEMs are now making their own distros. They don't feel they're getting what they want out of the operating system vendors, of which one is us, and so they're making their own. And they're not the only ones to do this. System 76 have also done the same, haven't they?
What's theirs called?
It's called POP _ OS.
Brilliant. Brilliant. That's going to live on like Yahoo, isn't it? Brilliant. So this what's different about this? Have they got their own kernel while Martin recovers?
It seems like they're focusing on the user experience here. So this is a GNOME desktop, which I thought was interesting and perhaps gives us a clue as to why they're doing this now. But they're saying it's focused on creators.
Right.
It's not quite clear yet exactly what that means, because at the moment the alpha is basically a nice looking theme.
Well, I think.
But there's a roadmap page which has some sort of things that they're looking at.
I think the nebulous, like hand-wavy term creators kind of describes their customer base. They've got some, you know, customers they've talked about. They've shown videos of people from media creation companies who use their high-end laptops for doing video rendering, stuff like that. So I think the creatives side is really just their target customers.
Right,
like,
cool.
So I think that's fair. I think it's interesting
that they're going out doing this, and I think it's it will be interesting to see what this develops into, whether it is just Ubuntu with a theme or whether they add some special sauce to it that's tailored for their customers. Bear in mind that this is a company that have a limited set of hardware that they support. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a bunch of laptops they've had over time that they support. So they don't have the same criteria as Ubuntu or any other Linux distro, which is we've got to support every single computer out there. They have a limited set of hardware they need to support. And they obviously get feedback from their customers to do that. So
can we read into this that if this is a powerful operating system for creators, that this initial incarnation with some theme changes and a new skin effectively is not the end game? That they've got greater aspirations of.
No, this has definitely sort of been released as, like marketed as an alpha. What's out there at the moment, and there's a roadmap on the website which says they're looking at things like streamlining the installer, adding CalDAV and CardDAV integration, and looking at the default app selection. I think that's probably going to be one of the key things about it is the apps that it comes with in terms of, you know, targeting at creators.
Mm-hmm. Wonder if it'll come with a bunch of elementary apps. And then later on shift, maybe that was a joke. Ignore that.
One of the things that occurred to me about why this might be happening now is with the announcement that Ubuntu is switching to GNOME, it might be seen among the OEMs that that's creating some uncertainty, and by taking charge of what they're shipping by shipping their own distro, that puts them in charge perhaps. Mm. And from System 76 point of view, is they've said, well, if we're going with GNOME, let's go with GNOME wholeheartedly. And with Tuxedo, they've said, well, we'll look somewhere else and focus on performance and battery life.
Yeah, interesting times.
I'd be interested to hear from our listeners if they feel the messaging from Canonical has introduced an air of uncertainty in what's coming next, or whether they have some certainty about where things are going. I'd be interested to know how that messaging is coming across.
Mm.
What's next, Alan?
Moving on to hardware news. Red, the modular camera manufacturer, has announced a new smartphone. And they've done this with one photograph or render of a device. And you can pre-order your device now for lots and lots and lots of money. Yes. And there are two different devices, but the key differentiator between this and every other phone on the planet is it has a holographic display.
Okay, ooh. Let's just rewind a moment. This is Red, the camera manufacturer.
The high-end camera manufacturer.
Top 100 creators. YouTube channels, excluding the slow-mo guys, all use to film their content.
Right.
That Red.
Yes.
And they've pivoted and they've made a smartphone.
Yeah, so it looks
from
like
Star Wars.
It looks like they're making a highly modular phone. So it's not necessarily just a phone that you buy that has a certain lens on it and it has, you know, a fixed set of functionality. There's a set of pins on one end that makes it look very modular, and the patents make it look very modular. Like, you can attach additional components to this. The price point alone, but with the modularity, it doesn't look like a mainstream device.
How's this different from a Fairphone then?
Because a Fairphone doesn't have additional features that you add to the phone. You can replace the parts in the phone.
Right.
But what this is adding pieces to the phone, which is actually what Red's cameras are like. You get a basic stock camera and then you add components that you need for whatever project you're doing. Says the guy who's never touched or seen a Red camera in his life, only consumed the content created with them. The pre-orders start around $1,200, and we will have to wait and see whether the display really is, in inverted commas, holographic, or whether
that's
just...
So you pre-order this now based on a render and a promise?
Yes.
Wow.
That's how pre-orders tend to work, don't they?
I
hands up, I pre-ordered No Man's Sky. I'm not pre-ordering anything ever again. I was
Google No Man's Sky if you don't understand the reference.
Yes. Moving on.
Okay. Well, apparently Skype has updated on Android and everybody is outraged because allegedly Microsoft have changed the messaging feature to ape Snapchat. So what's I've got Snapchat? One question. Well, that's my question. Actually, what is Snapchat and why do people care that Skype is doing what
Snapchat is like an app where you basically, you take a photo and you like tag it and add like drawings on it and stuff and then send it to your followers and then it basically self-destructs after an amount of time.
Thank you, young person. So it,
what is the point of that?
Yeah, quite. But people love it. And so, fairly recently, I think Instagram basically added Snapchat to Instagram. Do you know what Instagram is, Martin?
Well, apparently it's like Snapchat.
It is now. but yeah, and basically Microsoft said that their users were saying that they use Skype for calling their families, but then they go out into another app to do other types of messaging. And so they thought, well, why don't we build every other messenger into our
right?
Isn't this like the mid to late 1990s where every bit of internet connected software that was being created at the time basically aspired to being an email client?
I think it's more that people are realizing that it's young people who drive app installs these days, not old people. And those young people are incredibly fickle and will move. Like, you could get a classroom of children who all have similar devices, maybe iPhones and Androids and a mixture of the two. And they might all gravitate towards one system for chatting to each other. But it only takes a small number of them to trigger the network effect that they all switch. Like, you could have a whole classroom of children who are on Instagram and use that for chat. And then within a month, they're all on Snapchat, right? And it could be something else. And if you're not the thing that those people are using, you're irrelevant as far as they're concerned.
But are any of these companies making any money out of these particular services?
Facebook owns Instagram.
Right.
And I imagine they're quite rich.
Yeah, but because of Instagram or... for other reasons?
They have a portfolio of products. I don't know how much they make from each one. I'm not... Okay. I'll tap up mark@facebook.com and see what he says, but I don't know the data. But yeah, it seems to me that many of these apps are trying to pull in the young person market. That's all it is.
Okay. That's me told then.
Mm.
And finally, Gangnam Style has been robbed of its YouTube crown.
Oh, what crown was that? The one that it got 2 billion views and rolled over the 32-bit counter on YouTube broke YouTube.
But now another video has caught up with it and overtaken it in views.
Wow, really? But what could possibly be more
exactly
entertaining
what I thought.
Than Gangnam Style?
Is it Bohemian Rhapsody?
It isn't. It's a film from the soundtrack of Fast and Furious 7.
Really?
And it's like a pop ballad with a bit of rapping in it, and the video is basically just some guy at a piano and then clips from the film, and I don't know what's going on.
Ha!
I have no...
young person.
Yeah.
I have no
now you
idea.
Know what it's like to be me.
I have no idea why people are watching this video so much.
Probably because it's on Skype's interpretation of Snapchat and it's ephemeral, so they all keep having to come back.
You know
watch
who you sound like, Martin?
Again.
Do you ever watch Have I Got News For You?
No.
Oh, you sound a bit like when Ian Hislop talks about social media.
I do know who Ian Hislop is, but I used to watch Have I Got News For You, but don't watch regular broadcast media anymore, I'm afraid.
On that bombshell.
Thankfully, it's time for the sanity of the community news and events. And first this week, we would like to celebrate the good work of Simon Quigley. You might remember in episode 16, we had some feedback from Stephen Brandt asking about how VLC was going to get updated in the Universe repository, which is a community-maintained repository of software, because it had a number of CVEs. Well, I kind of went on holiday and didn't do anything about that, but Simon Quigley has fixed various CVEs in VLC, six in total, in fact, and sent all the SRUs in for Trusty, that's 1404, and Xenial, 1604, and then Zesty and Artful, which are the two. So Zesty's the 1704 release and Artful's the in-development release. And I just think that's pretty amazing that he's cleaned up VLC in the archive for all the Ubuntu users.
Wow, that's rather good of him. We did mention, I think, back then that, you know, it's in Universe and is kind of like the throw your hands in the air. Someone from the community should pick that up. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, at the time, nobody did. And it would be great if we could get more people involved in that process, you know, more people caring mm-hmm. about those packages in the archive. It'd be interesting to maybe talk to Simon about what the process was that he went through, because I don't actually know what he did. You know, I know some of the things, like he did an SRU and he probably put some patches on a bug and stuff, but it would be interesting to know from his perspective. Maybe we should have a chat with him and talk
we
about,
should
you know,
have
what
a chat with Simon, because aside from doing this good work, Simon is also the release manager for Lubuntu, and he's been leading the charge in introducing LXQt to the next version of Lubuntu. He also has some involvement in Kubuntu and the Ubuntu weekly newsletter as well.
Yeah.
So
he's
very much involved in all things community, so he'd be a good person to have a chat with.
Yes. In other news, Ubuntu is in the Windows Store. I think we've mentioned
this.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned this in the past, but now it really, really honestly is in the Windows Store. It's now possible on a normal Windows machine to go to the Windows App Store and search for Ubuntu and install it. And you get the bash on Windows, you know, the terminal in which you can type familiar Linux-y style commands. But the difference is you don't have to flip a load of weird switches and, you know, ask for potentially your cat to be taken away while you're installing it and all that kind of stuff.
So Ubuntu was the release distro for WSL. About a year and a half ago.
Yes.
But it required you to flip some switches in the developer tools and turn it on. And now it's just a one-click install from the Windows Store.
Yeah. Wow. And there's other distros are arriving soon too. And I noticed there was an interesting thread on Twitter about this where the announcement, I first saw the announcement. It's quite interesting. I have a thing on my Twitter that shows me anyone who mentions hash Ubuntu, and it was interesting seeing Microsoft employees mentioning hash Ubuntu. And I clicked through to it, and there was an interesting discussion about the fact that you can't install this on Windows 10 S, but only on Windows 10 proper.
Right, yes.
Which was raised by a friend of the show, Stuart Langridge, and they gave their reasons that it doesn't fit with the ethos of Windows 10 S, apparently. But there you go. It's in the store. If you tell your Windows loving friends or Windows using friends or developers that it's available for them to download and install.
Cool. Next up, Fedora 26 has been released.
Woo!
Which is shipping with the GNOME 3.24 desktop environment. It has a modular server preview, which is a separation of runtime and application into modules with different life cycles. So presumably this means you have like base server bit releasing with a certain cadence and then other bits that plug in on top.
And I think like most innovations in the Linux sphere at the moment, this is making good use of container technologies and container primitives in the kernel to do all of that stuff.
Cool. I was going to say it also marks the release of a new spin in the form of the LXQt desktop edition.
Yeah. I saw the announce, well, not the official announce, but someone mentioned it on Reddit yesterday. The official like release day was today, but someone mentioned it yesterday because they saw all the torrents go up. And just like when Ubuntu comes out, like people post links to the torrents and you know, there's an argument about whether that's a good or bad thing, but it's good for some reason in that people can start pre-seeding it so that on release day, when everyone starts downloading, you know, you can you can get it. So I grabbed all the torrents and put them on my torrent machine and started downloading. And I didn't realize just how many ISO images of Fedora there are. It's not just, you know, Fedora Workstation, i386, and AMD64. There's like 25 or so different images, the different spins of Fedora. So actually, I put them on my seeding machine, but it hasn't actually finished downloading all of them because there's just so many of these like 800 meg, 1.5 gig size ISO images. So there's a lot of stuff in there and a lot of choice in terms of which ISO you download. Worth a look.
Yep. And last up this week, there was Carl Richelle from System76 has posted on the Ubuntu Devel maining list a proposal to add a minimal setup option to the Ubiquiti installer.
And the base is one of the things I was mentioning from the roadmap. In fact.
Yes, yes. And the idea here is that if you choose the minimal install for those distributions that are using GNOME, it would be possible to use the GNOME initial setup to do all of the user configuration rather than asking for those prompts during the install.
So hang on, let's rewind. Anyone who installs Ubuntu right now, there's the Ubiquiti installer that you go through and you tell it your time zone, the language, keyboard, username, password, all that kind of stuff, partition layout and everything. And this proposal wants to skip some of those steps so that they're done later on at the part after the installation is done. Because that's where GNOME does those things, right?
Apparently. I'm not super familiar with how the GNOME initial setup works. The only time I've seen it, it's just a couple of next introductory steps. And I imagine that the full potential of that tool has been disabled in some way in Ubuntu because some of its capability is taken care of by Ubiquiti.
Right. Yeah, it's a bit like the Mac installer where you on a Mac desktop you basically just go blat the install, and then it's only once you turn it on for the first time after the install's been done it actually goes through like what we would consider the OEM setup. The OEM config stuff. That's the GNOME experience that I had when I installed it in a VM recently. It was very similar. I used Fedora and SUSE and a few others. It was very similar to that. So the discussion is currently ongoing.
So I imagine a way to test this would be to go and grab a copy of Fedora 26 with its GNOME 3.24 implementation and see what their initial setup tool looks like.
Mm.
And finally, we have an event. It is, of course, OGCAM. Whoa. It's happening on the 19th and 20th of August in Canterbury in the UK. You can go to ogcamp.org to find out more. And we are sponsored this year by Entroware and the Ubuntu community.
Ooh.
Mm.
And possibly other sponsors to come.
Yeah.
So come along and bring your talks and your things and your projects and have a jolly good time.
Yes.
There's information on the website about booking accommodation and getting your tickets and how to prepare a talk and stuff like that. And there's also a link to a Telegram channel from the website where you can come and discuss it.
Oh, have you both booked your accommodation?
I have.
I have not.
Oh, I have.
Good.
Well, two of us are going.
Glad we cleared that up. I'll be sleeping on a park bench somewhere, don't you worry. Or in the back of my car, which will be great. Right. Should we get on with the rest of the end of the show?
Yeah, let's do the end of the show.
Do you tweet? Follow at Ubuntu Podcast and like or retweet our tweets so all your Twitter buddies can find us.
I would just like to say that all of those people that have been following Laura's advice and tweeting and Google Plus oneing and sharing things and all the rest of it, it is making a remarkable difference to the listenership of the show, so please keep doing that.
Excellent.
Right.
And that's all for episode 19. We'll be back next week when we'll be reviewing the Dell Precision 5520 and we'll bring you some command line love.
Excellent.
Awesome. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Until then.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Mycroft, what are beans?